Let's go.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to Bingetown TV. I am Paul, and with me today are Luke and producer Dave. Today we are unbelievably excited because we get to talk about The Witcher, Nightmare of the Wolf. And we are huge fans of season one of the Netflix series, which has actually spurred us to read the books. And that was the real beginning of our love for this world. Also, Nightmare of the Wolf is a mix between one of our other greatest loves, anime. I mean, I couldn't have asked for anything better. I absolutely loved it on the second rewatch as well. And this is a great teaser, basically, for season two. And I cannot freaking wait for December 17th. But I'm getting ahead of myself. So let me ask you guys, what did you guys think of the movie?
Dude, I have so many thoughts to say right now. But just initially, it was fantastic. The animation was probably a 10 out of 10. The anime style was so good. If you guys didn't know, it was the same animator. I don't know if it's the same animator, or same animation studio as Legend of Korra. So kind of looked a little similar.
I was going to say it looked so much like Avatar: The Last Airbender to me.
It was way better than Korra's animation. Like,
I
just thought it was incredibly done. And to go off a little bit more about Paul, what you were saying. So not only did this, our love for the season one of The Witcher spawn us all to read all the books. So us three are pretty, I would say, versed in just the main lore of like the book canon stuff. But I think Paul also went in ahead and played the game. And none of us have ever played the games before. I'm waiting for the PS5 remake of Witcher 3 before I do it. But there's a lot to talk about in what's canon and what universe is what in The Witcher. And we'll get to that in a second. But Dave, what did you think?
Without a doubt, an incredible movie, just from animation, soundtrack, just plot alone was just amazing. 10 out of 10 for me. I'm excited to finally get on the podcast and talk Witcher because our podcast started a little bit after the release of season one, I want to say. So we've never had a chance to really let ourselves go with this kind of information. And plus, like, you know, we all freshly just read the books. So, you know, we're coming in hot with all this knowledge now. And like, it's great being able to watch something like this and be able to put pieces together of like characters that we see in this prequel to, you know, all that stuff. So I'm excited.
Yeah. One of the good things about this movie too, is you cannot have watched season one of The Witcher, not read any books. This is your first exposure to this world. And it is still a good movie. Like, it does make sense. But on the reverse side of that, if you did read the books or watch season one, this gives little hints and little nods to so many different things and different characters, different scenes. And it's just so rewarding for fans that do love this world and this lore.
Yeah, the first fight scene that you get with Vesemir, which before we go back to his childhood, is just incredible because it shows you all pretty much, if you've only watched the show, it shows you all of what we learned from Geralt in the Netflix show and more. Like, we saw him take the potions. We saw that in real time, which we knew from Geralt and stuff. We saw the extent of the different powers he's capable of using, the hand signs, which I know if you played any of the games, you know all about that stuff. And it just showed you how agile, how confident, and what they can do to monsters of the highest level of this world. It was masterfully done, and it skips like 45 minutes of exposition, throws it into one battle scene that looks like perfection. I just loved how they started this.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. I was not prepared. It is TVMA, and you know, it was similar to Castlevania, and I did watch that, and that was gory. But like, I was like, okay, like, I don't know how like violent this is going to be. Mm-hmm. And then first scene, gore everywhere, just like that Leshen just killing that family, like that little daughter just ripped apart. Mm-hmm. Like in front of everybody, I was like, oh, okay, so it's going to be really explicit. There we go.
That was really fucked up, that whole scene, just because like, I mean, I didn't know, like, I knew, I guess Vesemir was going to be the main character, but like, I didn't know how this family was going to tie in. I thought maybe they would have some importance, and then the father just gets fucked up. And I'm just like, well, this is a great start to the movie. That just instantly sold me.
Yeah, definitely set the tone. And just to give a little background of when this movie does take place, it takes place before season one of the Netflix series, which, you know, that doesn't really say a lot because season one was all over the place. But this is the rise of Vesemir from a young boy to a master witcher. And spoiler, if you haven't seen the movie yet, at the very end, there's a big reveal. This is also the beginning of Geralt's training at Caer Morhen.
So I'm not going to claim any of this for myself because I found some digging on Reddit and just to see what timelines lined up with, to see what universe that this movie adaption could be placed in and it count. And it seems to me that it breaks too many rules for the books. So that can't be true. And just specifically talking about the timeline itself, it's just impossible because a quote I have here, it says it cannot be canon, book canon at least, because Geralt was never at Kaer Morhen when it fell. And if you went by the movie, Vesemir would only be about 160-ish by the time the books start. Mm-hmm. But in the books, he's actually around 300 years old. So there's a lot of connecting there that it means that it's not going to be book canon, which is reasonable because the writer of the books, I forget his name.
Sapkowski.
Yeah, he doesn't really consider anything that's not the book's canon, which makes sense. So the good thing, though, is this movie seems to be able to, if you can stretch your imagination a tiny bit about, we don't get a lot of explicit reveals about the past in the Netflix show, but it fits in the Netflix show canon, in my opinion. I'm going to take it like that. I'm treating this as like how it happened, how Geralt got to where he was, how Vesemir, who we're going to explore in season two of the Netflix show, very explicitly how like he became who he was.
Yeah, I'm personally going to agree with you on that. I think I'm going to take the books separately as the show and the movie. And another thing that I guess we can compare there too is that in the movie here, Deglin is Vesemir's tutor, but I'm pretty sure in the Witcher games, it's explained that a man named Barman was Vesemir's tutor. So there's small differences. Overall plot does kind of, in some ways, like you said, match up, but overall, I'm just going to keep it completely separate. And I think, for what it's worth, though, introducing this movie as part of the canon to the show was a great idea, and especially how it was animated versus like live action, I guess.
Yeah, I'm totally treating it like canon. And we'll talk about this probably towards the end of the podcast, but the fall of Kaer Morhen is explicitly different than how it was described in the book. So like, yes. it can't be.
Yeah, I'm glad you cleared that up for me because I was trying to fit this in, like canon for the books and everything. Mm-hmm. And it didn't really make sense to me because, you know, like you said, Geralt wasn't there during the fall. Geralt was like being trained as one after they were already starting to become scarce. Mm-hmm. So that does make sense. Thank you for clearing that up. Also, just to give you a little sense of the geography here. So this movie mainly takes place in Kaer Morhen, which is Witcher's training and home. And that's
like the northeast.
It's pretty much as north as you can go. Okay. Yeah, it is a little northeast, but it's north as the map goes. And then the kingdom that it takes place in is Caedwan, and that's pretty north, but more central. It's right below Kaer Morhen, but, you know, more central to everything.
So a problem I have with the books, actually, is they don't go too deep into the political world building from other countries' point of view. Like, you hear it all through Geralt and Dandelion and Ciri while they're traveling, but you don't get too many points of views of other countries. You have, like, that one chapter where you see the spy. His name's, like, Dijkstra. He's in one of the other countries, but you don't really get to see it. So they kind of all blend to me. Like in my head right now, I can't really tell you what the difference between Caedwan is. They have, isn't there one that starts with an R that's the same, basically?
Redania.
Like, yeah. I don't really
Temeria.
Have. No, well, okay. Well, Sintra obviously is going to be the big one, but like all the other ones, yeah, and Nilfgaard, which is south and stuff, but all the other ones kind of blend together, which I guess is partially my fault for never having played the games. Do you have a good sense of the map from the games? Like, is that clear to you?
Yeah, definitely. That does a huge, I mean, I'm saying that as I have the map up right in front of me.
Yeah.
But no, I do have a good sense of the map just because the Witcher 3 does force you, when you're fast traveling, when you're traveling from place to place, you literally have to scroll over the map, and it does give you geography.
Can't wait to play. I'm so excited.
It's so good. Yeah, like Luke said, I did start playing Witcher 3 as soon as I watched season one. I got addicted and finished the books, and it was just hours upon hours of like, oh my God. I think the game made me fall like more in love with it too, because there's so much more deep lore that isn't technically canon, but like people take it as canon now. People take a lot of the game as like what happened after the books,
because the writer of the books never writes anything after, and like this all takes place, so you can't really unvalidate anything until he comes out with stuff. So it kind of makes sense. But I did have a quick question for you. So like you just said, the game puts you way more into the lore and the world, and it feels more vibrant and stuff. One of my biggest surprises when I was reading the book is kind of the lack of monsters in it. Like, Geralt doesn't really deal with that many monsters, like a handful every book. When I was thinking it's going to be like his main job, which it totally is, but a lot of it is his past of who he's killed in the before the main plot and stuff. But that's why I think another credit to this animated movie. It was awesome seeing things like the Strigas that get talked about, and just like the, you know, everything in the bog, like all those monsters. Mm. That's the kind of shit that I think they're going to lean into a little bit more in season two of Netflix. Yeah. To show how good Henry Cavill is being Geralt and kicking ass.
Yeah, like the demon that took over Vesemir's mother.
Yeah,
the
Yeah.
I just think that the books just end up taking a very much political route, because I think, yes, there's monsters in the world, but they're not like world ending creatures where these wars, if they continue on, will end the world essentially. So I think the book focuses more on that. But I agree, it was great seeing all the monsters mm-hmm. in this show, and hopefully we get more in the TV show, because just watching these kind of fights are just incredible. And like, just it provides more lore into the world, just seeing, like, especially in here, how there's crossbreeding, and like, so it's not so it's not even just one species of animal. There are mages who combine species of creatures, and it's just the movie does a great job. And I would agree with you in the fact that I would love to see more monsters come mm-hmm. out.
You know, the biggest monsters are bureaucrats.
That's, witchers. That's... I thought you were going to say witchers.
No. Witchers are the shit.
Yeah, they're bureaucrats.
But all right. Yeah. Let's just jump right into the movie. We're going to kind of be all over the place. We're just going to talk about everything we liked. But I want to say the first thing right off the bat, I loved Vesemir. I thought, you know, this younger version of Vesemir, already master witcher, so cocky, so charming, like compared to the very serious Geralt we get mm-hmm. in season one. Like he's fighting this Leshen, like at the end of the opening scene. And he's like, you know, no talking, like usually we can verse, you know, a little foreplay, like all the good stuff. And it's so fun to watch.
I love his art too. I think he just physically looks dope.
Yeah. Definitely.
Especially when he drinks the potion, his eyes go black and like the crackling comes in. It's so nice. But I agree, Paul. I love how it's just a different, because we're so used to the Geralt just by the books witcher, just do things for your own. Well, I guess he's doing it for his own purposes as well. But like, just the comical side of this is like, it shows that not all witches are like Geralt, I guess.
And Geralt is hilarious in the book, but in a condescending, quick-witted way where, I mean, I guess quick-witted isn't the right word, because Vesemir is also quick-witted, but it's such a, they have like opposite levels of comedy, and they both work really well, but it's refreshing to see Vesemir's. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Geralt gives like backhanded insult compliments, yeah. and Vesemir's just like a fuckhead, like just says whatever he wants. Mm-hmm. And I will say, I have way more respect for Vesemir after this movie. Obviously, he was a beast in it, but you know, the Vesemir we get in the games, he looks like this old, long gray hair, and like plump dude. He reminds me of the Dallas Cowboys head coach from like a few years back. I can't remember his name. No.
Like Rex Ryan had long white hair and was a little plump at some point in time. So
before we get to like the flashback to when we see Vesemir as a kid for the first time in the exorcism scene, stuff like that, when is the first time we see Phila Vandra?
After the opening fight, right? After the backstory as well, like after the exorcism.
No, because I think it's, you see him for a second early.
You're right.
And I just wanted to bring that up because you guys know who that is, right? Philavandra?
Philavandra.
He's the king of elves in the books or whatever. Maybe not.
No. Because, okay, so in the show itself and the books, the first time I think you see him is that chapter where there's like a devil in the cornfield and he ends up, you know, like the villagers hire Geralt to kill the devil, but it turns out the devil wasn't really evil. Mm-hmm. And he leads them to all the elves who are now at the beginning of the Skoshal phase where they're forming that clan. That's going to be a faction for the whole story.
Yeah.
And he is the one that had Dandelion and Geralt tied up and was going to literally murder them.
Mm-hmm.
Gets talked out of it and decides to trust on Geralt because what happens? Do you remember?
Geralt's a beast.
Yeah. He's just a beast. And he actually gives Dandelion the like legendary,
loot
that he uses throughout most of the story. It's like a special, you know, mythical loot that he gives him, which is cool.
They snapped his over their knee when they had him as
prisoners. So it was cool to see him. But Dave, what you're thinking of is he becomes basically a right-hand man of Francesca, who is the elf queen eventually. Right. She's just a fucking dope character.
Yeah, I love Francesca a lot. And hopefully we will see a lot more of her going forward.
Mm-hmm. Philavandrel is a key character in The Witcher 3. So,
oh, really?
It's really cool to see like the lore that they made up beyond what the books give and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and that was what I was going with earlier, is what you were saying about Vesemir being old. Like even in the books too, Vesemir is known as the oldest witcher in Kyra Moore, and mm-hmm. I think at the time, like, still the oldest. So it's cool seeing him in action, because even then, like, we just know him as the oldest. Like, we don't see him really fight or what he does.
And that times super well with, like, the end of this, that, like, mm-hmm. you know, makes sense, because he is the only one that's there to teach all the new generations, the last generations.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Luke, I figured that you really liked the power struggle when we were in the King's Court in Quaidon. Quaidon. And there was like the power struggle between, you know, just some of the assembly and Gilchrist, Tetra Gilchrist, who was just so anti-Witcher. I loved how that, just getting support and presenting their evidence to the king, and like, mm-hmm. hey, you got to have a good argument. And Lady Zerbst was so quick, just shit on Tetra the entire first scene that we got. And it was so satisfying.
I got a terrible read on Tetra. Like, every time she, like,
yes,
I thought she was going to be good. And then obviously it was turned out she was going to be anti-Witcher. And then I was like, okay, she's going to be a bitch, but once she hangs out with Vesemir, it's not going to be a thing anymore.
Yeah.
And then she just went the complete most evil route.
Yeah.
Because of the ending. We'll talk about that later. But, like, wow, I did not see Tetra coming.
No, I thought she was going to be good. Exactly what you're saying.
She looks exactly like Korra's girlfriend too. Right?
Oh yeah, the black haired girl.
She's not a firebender, right? She rides the thing.
Her father's like the richest, like, is the inventor of like cars essentially. Yeah, but yeah. Oh, that's a good point. I didn't think about that.
They look exactly alike. Yeah. Same animation studio.
But then we go into we talked about Phil Evangel, and then we go into the exorcism, which I thought was really well done as well, just because you see this drunk Witcher again, another side of a Witcher that we kind of like already had seen, but not really. Like, again, they're just showing their own personality, I feel like. Mm-hmm. Sure, he's a drunk, but he knows exactly what he's doing when the time comes. Like, he's fucking with Vesemir and his girl Ileana, just like kind of being a douche, but then he proves his worth when he comes to the exorcism and exercises that spider thing that seemed to be pretty powerful, honestly.
Dude, what a fucking cool ass throw of the knife by Deglin at the end when he finally escapes and he's like, you know, transforming and stuff. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of good knife throws in this movie. And one of the best ones is Vesemir's later. He doesn't even like throw it. He like puts the knife in the air and smacks the handle and it like spins at like an enemy. They just, I don't know how, but they came up with such good like animation qualities for how the Witcher is going to fight. Cause like, who saw the chain thing coming either from Vesemir? That was wild.
Attack on Titan. That's exactly what I was thinking.
One of the other awesome things about Vesemir fighting too, is they did show you in that opening scene when he was fighting the Lushan, he coated his blade in oils. And
I missed that.
That was like a huge nod to the games, which is, that is a huge mechanic in part of the games, is like, you find ingredients and recipes, you create coats and oils to put on your sword, and then that's super effective when you go on and fight. So I love how they're just incorporating the game aspects of the game into this. And like, one of the huge ones was, you know, the use of Igni, the fire sign.
Yeah.
Did they ever use that in the books? I'm trying to remember, and I don't remember.
The thing about the books, and also the show too, if it follows along closely with the books, is Geralt, because the Witcher clan isn't really a thing, Kaer Morhen's already in Fallen, we're hundreds of years past that, and Witchers are very sparse, they don't have easy access to the materials that give them the potions. And basically, Geralt never ends up using the potions that make his eyes go all black, because after the first like book or two, he runs out and he's doing shit the entire time, never finds other ingredients. So it's kind of hard, because that's why he doesn't cast that much either, because he doesn't have like everything he needs. So it's kind of hard to tell. And if you're just a show watcher, you probably think the magic is less important to the Witchers than it can be. But if they have the materials, I think they're just balling out, right? Like, they're just shooting fireballs.
I think we proved that in this movie. I mean, the amount of times they do that, like, they use magic is absurd. Like, it's honestly as equal to the amount of times he's using his sword, almost. Mm-hmm. It feels like.
Yeah, I'll touch on that at the very end. That was actually one of the things I kind of wasn't a huge fan of how they portrayed, but I mean, it was still cool as fuck.
Saying they used overpowered magic.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I saw people complaining from a game perspective saying, like, what the fuck is that fire in the lake? Like, how can you be that strong? It's supposed to be a little bit more supplemental than, like, a main attacking thing, right?
Yeah, like, the way to look at it is, I mean, the Witchers call it magic, but it's like the base form of magic. And like, the whole thing is that mages look down on witches that use it, because mages study for centuries and centuries to perfect this magic, and then they do like little silly parlor tricks.
Yeah.
And they're like, dude, that's not magic. That's like a pathetic excuse of a push.
I guess it's supposed to be more like how they actually do show it in Netflix season one, when Geralt's only really using it to like buy him some space when he's pushing
the art
rather push. Than making it, which I really like still.
Dude, I want to play the game so badly.
I can't wait, man.
But I want to say two things. We get the big quote here of never hesitate during the exorcism. Never want to hesitate. That's a big, that'll hit home for Vesemir later on. And then the reason why Philavandrel scene was so important was because he introduces Vesemir to a potential form, like the one of the antagonists of the show, essentially, or the movie, saying there's this elf gone missing. Her name's Kitra or Kitris, whatever. So we get introduced
to
Kitsu. We get introduced to her right away. So I just wanted to point that out in the beginning.
Also, yeah, just realized that the first time we do see Philavandrel, which we were talking to, it was the classic bathtub scene where Vesemir is in the bathtub. And I was watching an interview with one of the showrunners, and she was saying, like, yeah, like if you do Witcher in any sense, like you need a bathtub.
To do that,
it's a bathtub scene is a necessity.
That's so sweet.
But also at the end of that scene, it was just a little something that was funny. He looks at the pie, and then he gets a flashback to when he was young, and he says Ileana and stuff like that. But when the first time I saw it and he looked at the pie, I was like, he like hesitates and pauses, and I was like, is he going to fuck it? is this like American Pie?
American Pie, yeah.
Yeah, Battle of Karen Warren, American Pie.
So we don't really have to go into details, because it's just a basic, pretty much boring background of Ileana and Vesemir being like servants, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Is her last name, do we find it out here?
No.
Okay.
She adopts the name, though.
Okay. Yeah, because she marries into it.
Yeah, it's only Ileana,
so,
as we know.
I was going to ask, I guess she's just made up for the show. I don't know if we know any lore about her.
I personally, that does not ring a bell.
So when I was looking on the Wikipedia, it doesn't even mention her as a character. It does mention Vesemir's his first love on the Wikipedia, which is not Ileana, with someone different. So I think it's just a character.
Okay, just a representation of her. Because she's kind of a little jag in the beginning, a little bitchy, like freaking out at him for wanting to leave.
Yeah, he had bigger, like, they were poor, poverty, like, both of them were born into poverty. They're both going to be not slaves, but just bitches the rest of their life, essentially. And he was like, I want out of here. And she's like, why? We have a roof over our head. And he's like, it's barely a roof. We have food, barely enough food. So he wants to get out. And
he makes the right decision, because he just chases Deglan, who kind of,
he tempted him.
Yeah, he definitely did, with the money and showing him the power.
Oh, he did that on purpose.
He
admits it later. He's like, you did that on purpose. Deglan doesn't agree, but he's like, you were flashing to me what you're doing.
So yeah, he gets the Kaer Morhen, and oh my god, this training looks horrible.
The trial of grasses.
I loved seeing it, though. I thought it was like, it needed to be basically as intense as it was, if it was going to have the death rate that they mentioned multiple times throughout every single one of the mediums, like the trial of grasses, no one survives. It fucks your body up. You go through all these poisons and shit. And that's quite literally why Geralt's hair is white, because he had like the most intense transformation.
Yeah, that shit is cool. A slight breakdown for those of you that don't know the full details. There's three trials, technically four. I mean, one is trial of the sword, but it's not an actual trial. It's just you need to...
Capable.
Awesome with the sword.
Yeah.
And then there's a trial of the grasses, which is the potion, which is a potion of various alchemical ingredients, which affects their nervous system, aka their enhanced reflexes. There's the trial of dreams, which is the mutation of the eyes, the bone marrow, and the hormones, which also makes them infertile. That's the whole thing. And then the trial of the mountains, which in the books, I assumed it was like a run through a course. There's obstacles, you need to go through it. In this,
like, that's what Ciri basically goes through.
Yeah. In this, I think their trial was just waking up in the Red Swamp.
Yeah.
And then half of them just getting fucking ripped apart.
Dude, unbelievable, man. Those things were so fast. Did they name those kind of monsters?
They were not wisps. They were
Willow-wisps?
Wraiths?
Wraiths. Yeah, that's what they were. They were wraiths. And I mean, there were two different types of monsters. The wraiths were the super quick ones in the very beginning that kill like three of them
off the zombie looking things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we see that one dude get his arm ripped off but still live. And then later on, that's the Witcher with the one arm.
With the one arm.
Who saves Vesemir.
I noticed that. I noticed the one arm guy later. I didn't put that together, though.
Yeah, like Vesemir's like, right before they go to bed, like one dude's crying and Vesemir's like, hey, dude, don't worry about it. You'll be okay. And then like later in the Red Swamp, he gets his arms ripped off.
Tomas is how it's spelled.
Gotcha. He's also the one that informs Vesemir of mages. There are mages in Kaer Morhen that are just like old, and they're the ones who are responsible for the trials and everything, who create witchers essentially.
I mean, that was just gruesome as hell.
So after the trials were brutal. After that, do they get their medallions after that?
I think they had them before. They wake up with them because
That's right.
Everyone that dies, they take it and put it on the tree as like a remembrance.
Right. So Vesemir wakes up after one of the trials and his coin's kind of going crazy. And there's like a locked door that he explores behind, and he goes into the basement and sees that there's a bunch of disgusting monsters just everywhere.
It's like
there.
A mad scientist. Like there, people get their things are getting like
pried open, dissected. And shit, yeah. And then we get introduced to Rydrick. That's his name.
Okay.
Who's the old mage who is responsible for overseeing the trials for them.
Yeah, the trial. He creates all the potions mm-hmm. for the trial of grasses. Gotcha. Yep. Yeah. He looks like a boss.
Yeah, he has a cool character design.
Yeah, I thought he was really cool. I thought he was a little fucked up. But, I mean, it does introduce the idea that mages will pretty much do whatever in the name of science and curiosity. Like, what happens if I do this, what happens if I do that?
And we get that in the books too, which is awesome. So it's cool to see how the transformation of just the beginning of science, essentially with crossbreeding, into what it becomes into the books. But we get through him drinking the Trial of Dreams, and it's pretty brutal. Ileana is responsible essentially for helping him survive that. He's just constantly thinking of her. She's the motivation for him to survive. And then we transition into an older Vesemir.
Wait, real quick though, do we see his eyes turn cat-ish in that scene too?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so like the final trials that they go full Geralt, where that gives him like night vision.
They get the orange, right? Yeah, the orange. Yeah.
He like closed his eyes in pain, and I was saying to Emily, he's gonna open them. He's gonna open them. They're gonna be Witcher eyes.
Yes,
and they did.
But he wakes up, and then we get that quick little fight of him fighting a werewolf, which was really cool too. When he's hunting it down, he's fucking spinning everywhere, cuts the werewolf's arm off and all that shit. It
just
was really
a crazy cool montage. That's when he's older.
Yeah.
So it's like a great montage of him just, it skips. You can assume it's like 50, 60 years, because I think when he meets up back up with Ileana, she says she's 70.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just a good montage to show that time means so little to witchers if they can really live 3 centuries, 4 centuries, whatever. But it was just cool seeing him gain. We see the source of all of his confidence. We see the source of all of the money that he has to live on, and just how he has dealt with all these different monsters. And I'm just like basically copying Geralt's backstory and just assuming it was essentially like that.
I love him versus like the zombies in the cave when he finishes them all off by just, I know it's kind of, it might be like overpowered, but he throws the fucking fireball and just all of them just disintegrate, and he's just sitting there smiling. It's just such a badass scene.
He's just like surrounded by like a million ghouls.
Yeah, he's just fucking them all up.
And he starts smiling. He's like, oh man, it's going to be fun.
And then it's raining gold on him. He's just like in the town. Yeah. He's holding up his posters that he's like slain all these beasts, and he's just living life as a witcher right now. And he clearly made the right choice in his mind way back in the day.
Fuck, dude, the witchers are so cool. Would you be one? Would you rather be a servant that just like dies under a random lord, or would you try and go through the trials?
That's what Vesemir was saying.
I think the trials would fuck me.
I'm dead, but I would still probably do it.
It depends on where I'm. If I'm in Vesemir's position, if I'm just gonna be a lowly servant, fuck it, why not? But if I'm already like in royalty, maybe not. But
I mean, you got a 50-50 shot of dying by diarrhea in that age, so it's like you might as well just be a witcher.
Vesemir's saying in training, and all the other kids in the barn or whatever, the shed, are sleeping and trying to go to bed. He's like giving them a pep talk, saying like, hey, like if we become a witcher, we're not going to have to be scared of anything again. Like witchers are the ones that kill all the threats. So like, I would rather do this than live like a life as a peasant. And I was like, that makes kind of a lot of sense, man.
No, it really does.
We're also introduced, as the montage finished, we also see him with his fellow witchers. It's Eskel, Lambert, and Ramus.
Eskel, Lambert, and Ramus, yeah. And then also Luca, the redhead one. Yeah. Maybe that's later.
I thought Lambert was in training.
Oh, maybe those are the kids. Are those
sorry,
the kids
yes,
that they
that's
adopt?
It. They yeah. are sorry, the kids' sorry, names. Sorry, yeah, sorry.
Luca is one of
the witches. Redhead. Yeah, he is the redhead. I think
he looked like a boss. Thought he was going to be way cooler, and then he gets his head chopped off real quick.
That was
I not was real like, quick. That was okay. I have questions about that too. But are we just jumping there? It doesn't matter.
I mean,
we can get there. We can. It's just basically they get like they go out and get properly drunk at a bar. They fuck. They. Those guards from the castle are fucking with them. Like, you guys are witchers. Get the fuck out of here. Mm-hmm. No one wants you. They kill them and they get arrested.
Yeah, but the ending of it is after the whole mission where Geralt and I mean Vesemir and Tetra, you know, go back and whatever. And when they go back to the palace, Vesemir leaves without even caring about Luca and leaves him just in their jail. And then he dies. Like,
he left. Ileana responsible for him. He's like,
yeah, but why would you leave without Luca? What is he? You did your job for the kingdom.
I think he's already like he shouldn't even be allowed to leave in the first place. I think like they're prisoners, yeah. And like Ileana, because she knew Vesemir, was like, okay, we need him to do something about the people out there. Otherwise, we're still gonna die. So like, let's just leave, let one of them go while the other one's still here. Because I think like at the end of the day, Vesemir, like they thought that Vesemir would still come back for him. You know, at the end of it, like so,
yeah.
But yeah, this is where we get the reveal. So Lady Zerps, who was countering Tetra Gilchrist at the beginning of the movie, here we see her reunite with Vesemir, and it's Lady Ileana, which I will say in my mind, I kind of saw coming. Like I saw, as we kind of got a little bit more into the backstory, I was looking at Lady Zerps and I was like, you know, her eyes are very similar. Like the hairstyle is kind of similar to Ileana. So not that big of a surprise for me personally, but honestly, I thought it was a well done still reveal.
I you break this tie because I felt like just through your explanation, like, and talking to you before the podcast, I feel like an idiot for not having instantly guessed that. But I guess I was just also not really taking detailed notes and I just like let it happen. But I was like, whoa, Ileana, that's cool. I liked it.
And I think going back to, it's easier to view it as a better reveal just because the first time you're watching it, you're seeing those montages. You're like, okay, what is this? Like a couple of years, blah, blah, blah. And then like when you finally see him at this point and then it's 60, 70 years later, it's like, okay, holy shit, that's wild. But
that's probably what I can hang my hat on is I did not assume it was 60 years.
Yeah. I did my classic Paul. I called it 5 seconds before they explicitly said it.
That's Ileana.
Yeah. Like she comes out of the shadows and she's all in front of Vesemir. And I was like, that's Ileana. And then, you know, Vesemir says it 5 seconds later.
Yeah, yeah.
So it doesn't really count. But it kind of does. So I didn't realize it going into it. But was this after the mission with Tetra?
No,
right before. So we're now like we said, Ileana basically grants pardonship for Vesemir just to go out and fight this monster that's been killing a lot of the townspeople essentially. So they're gonna leave it to him. But Tetra doesn't trust Vesemir, I believe, as a witcher to kill this thing. So she's like, I'm going to tag along. Or maybe he thinks that because she's strong, like brings, regardless, they're going together to fight this monster that's been killing the town.
Basically a chaperone. And Vesemir's like talking this whole time. It's cutting through scenes. Tetra's not saying a word. Vesemir's saying like, it's a business. That's what you don't understand. Like it's all about the coin. Like,
I was getting a lot of Geralt and instead of it being
Dandelion.
Geralt, I was thinking of him as Dandelion in this scenario and her being Geralt.
I guess, like, we should be saying Yasker because that's kind of Yasker, more common thing. For those that don't know, Dandelion is the character that Yasker is based off of. They're the same person. And it's just the bard who's the man. But before we get to like the fighting parts of this trip, they have that one part by the campfire, which is just, to me, blew my mind that they were, I didn't know that this could be a thing, but what Tetra starts doing is she just basically starts randomly playing with the fire and like using magic based on the fire. And then Vesemir says right away, like, I thought that was like forbidden for any mages to do. And if you're a book reader, you know what's coming. That is going to be an incredibly important plot point way down the road for our main series.
I mean, even in the show at the very end, you kind of get a little taste of it because what's her name is using fire magic at the end of the war, and like that was a huge deal for their side. That was like the main reason that they were even in that battle, like, to even though they lost, but that was the main reason that kept them in the battle.
Yeah,
that was sweet how they're like, yeah, it's usually forbidden, but because most mages can't handle it and control it, but I'm a boss. So it really did show how powerful of a mage that this Tetra character actually was.
Do we get the explanation of like who, like how, why she's so strong yet at this point in time?
I mean, she's just a driven mage, and all mages, well, if you study hard enough, can be a badass, I think.
They also mentioned that she was the descendant of the very first human mage.
Like, oh, yeah.
So her ancestors were already gifted in that sense, being the first mages. So, of course, she's going to be powerful. So I don't know if it explains it here, but we can just say that now.
Yeah, we see Kitsu. Kitsu was this elf, but now it's like an elf fox demon, and like gets the help of this flying like griffin
basilisk.
That's what it was.
They're also is it Kitsu also using the illusion magic there?
Yes,
because she's crossbred with
You can also attribute it, I guess, partially to Tetra, because Tetra was in on this the whole time, right?
Yeah, true.
I don't know,
because it was probably combined. It was probably both of them.
Tetra's the one they're walking around forever and ever and ever, Naruto tuning exam style, right, where they're always like walking towards the tower, and she just breaks the illusion magic, which seemed intense as hell, like her doing that whole thing. And to me, right away, that puts her on Yennefer in her prime level. Like, I think that we can assume that.
I think she might be stronger.
She could be, because she was not scared of fire. Yeah, which is awesome, because right there, that's respect in itself, because Yennefer's a beast.
Oh, hell yeah.
But yeah, that a breaking of the illusion starts this epic battle where I love these two tag teaming together. And this is the part where I was like, okay, like Tetra's going to be team good guys.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I thought Vesemir was going to persuade her.
Dude, her arrow magic is so badass. I love when she does that. It's so cool.
He saves her, and then she saves him.
Yeah.
Goes back and forth. And then they end up taking it down.
The finishing move, oh, was so cool. I think, what is she? She creates like an ice barrier around it.
And then he fucking sticks his hand through it, and just
fire
fucking
magics it.
Oh. Igni. Uses Igni.
Yeah,
hand.
Yeah. That was so fucking
I
tough.
Loved that. Yeah.
So tough.
Again, that, like, I personally think it might have been a little bit overpowered, but it looked dope as hell.
Yeah.
And if that's the way we're going with it, that's fine.
I mean, even if you say overpowered, like we just said, we just compared her to fucking Yennefer. So,
Well, no, I was talking about him. Yeah. Like a witcher using magic. But either way, you know, Kitsu is like crying over this and then runs away. They follow him. It goes back to the lair. This is where Philavandrel comes back in. And there's like another elf demon splice that they're kind of debating about what to do. Philavandrel wants to take it, saying, hey, maybe like spliced with genes of a demon, but still an elf. Like, let me take care of it. And Tetra's like, kill that bitch right now.
Yeah.
Sorry, I do want to cut in, just go back a little bit to the knife throw that fucking Vesemir does when Kitsu turns into a fox, runs away into the avalanche.
That might be it or something.
Yeah,
he's running into the avalanche. And like right before the avalanche hits Kitsu as a fox, Vesemir does this badass knife throw.
Yeah.
Doesn't hits something, but it wasn't the fox.
I think it hit her, the fox, and just injured her.
It just injured her. Okay.
And they use that to follow it.
Yeah, we get into the crossbreeding thing again.
Yeah, and then this goes all back to the idea of like, what the hell is mutating all of these new monsters, and why are there different breeds being crossed and making normally peaceful elves into vicious demons? Mm-hmm. That's like the whole problem, right?
And Vesemir has the flashback to an earlier conversation that we didn't talk about, but he has a conversation with Deglin, and it's really cool. They're sitting by the fire, and there's like a basilisk tooth, and they throw it in, and he's like, oh, that's not a griffin tooth. Deglin's like, oh, I can choose. I was like, oh, what does that mean? I want to know like what they're fucking doing. But this is where Deglin tells him, hey, like, you're going to be taking care of the training, the new recruits, because there are witchers that are not returning to Karamorn. They're finding more lucrative business elsewhere. And, you know, monsters are dying out. It's hard for a witcher right now. Like, we're having a hard time actually killing and fighting monsters.
He makes a comment saying, like, if only there were new species of monsters. Said, at that point in time, personally, I also was like, evil. Like,
Vesemir was telling him about the Leshen that he fought in the opening scene, saying like it could talk. And Deglin's like, hey, like, I've never heard of that, but yeah, like, we could use a few new monsters to kill. So Vesemir remembers this in Kitsu's lair. Like, they see everything all spliced and fucked up and experimented on.
So he starts getting suspicious, which leads him to leave his boy Luca and eventually when we get back to the castle. But question, and this is embarrassing that I don't really know this, is this a common knowledge thing that has happened throughout all of it? Like, are there constantly mutated monsters in the books and shit that I just don't really remember as being like a huge part?
So I think some of the like the new monsters, like some of the monsters Geralt didn't even really know the name of, like he just like saw them and like, what the hell is that disgusting thing? I think that could like be
like, was this an idea
a gene splicing
in the in the books? Was this the idea that like there's a the reason like there's so many crazy monsters, like Geralt ever say that to Ciri while they're walking or something? Like is this a new thing? Because it could be new.
It could be new. Now that you say that, I feel like they do touch it in the games. They talk about like
they do
splicing and just experimenting on demons and stuff.
Okay.
But then again, the games do take place way after this, or yeah. Witcher 3 takes place way after this.
They just skip all the science in the books and they just go right back to it in the games, probably.
All the monsters, yeah. But no, I think, Luke, I think this is the first time they explicitly say, mm-hmm. like, hey, this individual was creating new monsters.
And I think it's also the first time we explicitly are shown that how the extinction of the creation of Witchers happened, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
It's just kind of assumed, right, that the mages died or whatever. You don't really know much about why they can't, especially in the show, they don't tell you at all. They say, like, yeah, we can't make Witchers anymore. And I feel like they cut them off anytime he, like, tries to answer it.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's season two is going to be like all of that.
I would hope so.
I think it's going to go into Ciri like training and stuff like that. So, you know, we'll get to that. But yeah, I think that is a new idea that they had about splicing genes and stuff like that. But the fall of Kaer Morhen, not a new idea, but they never talked about how it happened. Mm-hmm. So that was the cool part about this. And that's pretty much where we get to right now. I mean, Vesemir sees, like, has that realization, and he says, okay, I'm going back right to Kaer Morhen, and I'm going to try to find out what's going on, and I'm going to confront Deglin. And when he leaves, that's when Tetra stays behind and waits for Kitsu to come back. And Tetra herself uses her magic, causes an avalanche, destroys everything that Kitsu had right there. So when Kitsu comes back, completely pissed, and Tetra's like, hey, I know who did this. The Witchers did it. Take him down with me. Mm-hmm.
I just want to make a comment here because it's a perfect time for it. Just the racism going on in the show, just between like elves, humans, Witchers, just everything. Like there's just bad blood that's displayed really well here that continues in the books. And
oh,
I think
so
it'll eventually,
books, yeah.
Just because I think so at this point in time, what Phil Evangel, like it was explaining in the cave, was that the humans eventually just basically pulled like, Thanksgiving Day murder on fucking all of the elves, essentially just like, okay, like they needed resources, they took our resources, mm-hmm. like save this crossbreed girl just because we don't have anything else, you know. So there's just hatred breeding hatred at this point in time, and the same thing goes with Tetra and the Witchers, just hatred breeding hatred, and it's just no one can see the peace on either side. They both just want to massacre the other.
That's very faithful to the source material, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Another thing I noticed here, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, but didn't it look like when Tetra, you know, she did all the magic to basically flood the caves and stuff and hide it, she absorbed the lifespan of all the trees and killed all the trees to use that magic at that level?
Did she?
Yeah. And that's the cool. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because that further confirms to me that this is meant to be a show thing, because that's a huge difference from the book and the show. Is in In the Witcher show, they make it a point when Yennefer's doing all of her training, you have to steal life from something to use magic, when that's not a thing at all in the books. So like even when Evil Witch at the end of the show,
Fringilla.
Yeah, when she's shooting the huge cannon, she's literally having her mages like sacrifice their lives to do it. When I don't think that's ever mentioned in the book. So if I caught that detail right and that's what it was meant to do, then this is definitely meant to be a show.
You caught it right. I'm rewatching the scene right now, and it makes like it a point where life, it's pulling aura from trees.
Yeah.
I don't think you see the barrenness afterwards. Yeah. So you're completely right. Yep.
Yeah. That's a big difference that a lot of fans are kind of split on between the show and the books. Is in the books, it's kind of like elemental power. Mm-hmm. Like you just kind of have it, and it's through the elements that which you get your source. And in the show, it's like, hey, you need to destroy something to create something, mm-hmm. Which personally I think the show doesn't do a good job of sticking to later on.
Yeah,
like whenever Yen uses magic, but that is a really sick detail that you guys caught, that I'm really glad that they included it, because mm-hmm. that's sweet.
Yeah,
and like I always say, it's fine if you have a crazy power system, just make rules and stick to it. So if they're doing that, fuck yeah.
Don't watch Wynonna Earp if you like that, if that's your thing.
Yeah,
watch Wynonna Earp. It's great.
So yeah, Vesemir goes back to Kaer Morhen. He looks at the lab, and Deglin comes in, perfect timing, and he's confronting Deglin, and Deglin's like, yo, you're not fucking like ruining everything I worked for. Cue a fight. And I mean, this is just so cool. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, student the protege versus the master at this point.
I was waiting for Deglin to say something along the lines of like, I know all your moves, all this stuff. Yeah. He didn't say it, but I was waiting for him to be like, I trained you, all this stuff. Like, I know what you're going to do and kick some ass. But they were both equal, I would say. And that's probably just because Vesemir is a lot younger and probably basically in his prime right now, where Deglin is definitely feeling the effects of the alcohol over the years.
And he's definitely a little older.
In the background of all of this stuff happening is when the rally of Tetra, she full heel turn goes, leans into being evil, right? They kill Luca. She starts raising the army. They like, tell Ileana basically go fuck yourself.
That witchers are she made it a point that to prove that witchers are all evil. Like this all happened because of the witchers. So she got what she wanted.
She got a little bit of proof from the opening scene where that Leshen killed the whole family. They made it a point to say Vesemir didn't bury the bodies, and so people are saying, "Oh, the witchers waited for the families to die and stole everything." They went back to the bar, like you were just saying, like, oh, they killed these good noble soldiers for the kingdom. And this was the final straw. They had slight evidence, but all the evidence was the word of Gilchrist that they are creating monsters so witchers stay important, so they're killing people. Mm-hmm. And that's when Luca gets his head chopped off.
And I think now's the perfect time for me to mention this piece of information. That king, that idiotic king, is the
King Daegred.
Whatever it is. He's the great, 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 blah, 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 grandfather of Calanthe.
Okay.
Oh, well, it wouldn't be that many greats.
I mean, it's not that many greats, but still, that's great, pretty cool. Yeah, so that's the descendant of Ciri right there.
That is awesome.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Or ancestor of
ancestor,
Ciri.
Ancestor, yeah, not descendant. Ciri is the descendant of that man.
How did Ciri get all the way down to Sintra? Caedwan's all the way up the top.
I don't know.
There's got to be some crazy.
There might be a connection, but it was. I don't know, because it wasn't ever mentioned in the show that he was related to Calanthe or whatever. But people brought it up because I think just off the name alone, they were like, okay, yeah, that's relationship. So hopefully, he or his at least story of his ancestors comes back up into how they get into Sintra. Hopefully,
that's dope.
Mm-hmm. So back to the Kaer Morhen, you know, the fight gets broken up. When Ileana, you know, escapes the castle, comes here and says, yo, like, this is about to happen, right?
Yeah.
And then I think that's when Tetra shows up.
Mm-hmm. Tetra's at the gates with her army. And they're like, oh, it's not too bad. And then, you know, Tetra sets up, opens up some portals. And Kitsu is in the Red Swamp, just sending all these monsters in through the portals. And the witchers are like, well, shit. What the fuck are we going to do? Balls to the wall.
But like, also, as this is happening, two things happen, right? We find out, like, now we get words dialogue that says, you know, they're in Kaer Morhen, and all the witchers, and they're saying, like, we cannot let Rydrik die, because if he dies, the ability to make more witchers goes out the window. So that already escalates the stakes. Mm-hmm. And for anybody that knows anything about the show, you already know what's going to happen eventually. But that's just cool, because Vesemir, while he doesn't approve of the methods, knows that he needs to keep this dude alive. They want to keep producing witchers. Mm-hmm. So that happens, and then we have the kiss, right?
Yeah,
which I loved. I did not. He's like, I thought that was awesome. I was like, dude, he doesn't even care.
Yeah,
and she's like, I'm 7 years old. I'm not cute.
Yeah, doesn't even care.
Yeah, loves her for who she
is. I'm 72, motherfucker.
Yeah, I love that. That was such a good line. She's like, please, I'm 70. He was like, dude, so am I, bitch. That was sweet.
Yes,
but this battle is fucking epic.
So
asked for anything better out of this short.
All the monsters is rushing the front gate. They're going over the keep bridge, and Vesemir's telling all the witchers, like, "All right, wait, 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 wait," and then use your Igni, and they just fucking light everybody up.
So badass.
And then you know, like we said, balls to the wall. They just start running. All the witchers just, all right, set your sights on a monster and kill it, and then move on. And it was just like bang, bang, bang.
Because you do think in the beginning, like when she shows up with all the humans, it's like, okay. They even make the point. Deglin's like, it's a bunch of fucking humans. Like, cakewalk, we got this. But in reality, not even close to that. Like, they fuck up all the humans, basically, I want to say, in this war. But like, the monsters are just too much for them.
The fight, man, was so good. Like, we've been saying the choreography was amazing, but like, the anime transitions to different parts of the battlefield and different fights, and like, it was, there was so much going on, but at the same time, nothing was like too busy or you couldn't completely comprehend what was happening. You know, just switching from Vesemir fighting on a dragon and his boy Tomas or whatever coming in using Ard on his like stump and just killing it and saving his ass. And it was so good.
Tomas is the one that jumps off the bridge. Like, he's trying to save Vesemir, who's hanging off the bridge, right? And then the thing starts rushing at him, and he's just like, fuck, and he falls, and Vesemir saves him somehow.
It's so good.
Yeah, that was all great.
I love the line, too, where Deglin and Vesemir finally make up, because like, okay, we gotta get through this together if we want to survive. And he's just like, can you forgive me long enough, young fella? And they just go into the castle and just fucking,
dude, I wrote down that their team up was one of the best fucking like 10 seconds of the entire thing. They're like, they're like fighting together. And oh my God, I'm getting chills right now thinking I literally have chills. That was such a cool animation moment. Mm-hmm. They just work so well together. Cause that's master. This is, I want to see that out of Geralt and Vesemir. Cause
That would be incredible.
No way, though. Vesemir is definitely on his last. Well, I guess he's technically not, but he's probably so old. And
they can take any approach they want.
He can swing the sword, but I don't know how well he can swing it.
He's already cast, and I forget who he's casted, like the actor that's going to play Vesemir in season two. But if he's young enough, then who cares?
I'm in.
I say full send. Yeah.
But then things get really dark as Vesemir continues on while Deglin stays to fight a monster. You see these monsters fucking eating alive, like one of the Witchers. Spiked heads of other Witchers going around. The monsters are just having the time of their lives right now.
But at this, also at that moment when it looks like, you know, a bunch of the Witchers are taking it, that's when we get the cool flying fight, and he's using the Attack on Titan chain to the best abilities. He like has his sword like a million miles away attached to it, and he like pulls himself back towards the flying monster. Oh, that
using
was so Igni
to change direction in the air, all that shit, like so bad. Awesome.
And we said it before, but I'll say it again. This was a great way to show how Kaer Morhen became ruins. Like in the books, in the games, you just accept the fact that Kaer Morhen, as long as you've known it, has always been ruins. It was attacked way before and has never really been built back up to its old self with, you know, just parts of a castle here, parts of a castle there. But this was a great way to show how it actually happened.
I agree. I just couldn't have imagined anything better.
It's
a fucking bloodbath. And I love when that human with the like the scar, the Zuko, Prince Zuko scar on his face, like Vesemir comes in off flying one of those guys, the basilisk essentially, and the thing just beheads that human. What a great scene. I was not expecting this kind of violence out of the show, but I loved every second.
Yeah, hell yeah.
So then this gets us to probably the climax of it when we're back in the alchemy chamber. God,
yeah, this scene.
Was a really really intense
this
scene
did a fucking number for me. I loved it so much. So Ileana's with the young Witcher children. She tells them
Ileana.
She tells them to go off,
run away.
Who we find out is eventually, big reveal, Geralt. He's like, I know an exit. And they're like, why do you know about that? And he's like, I'm trying to run away. Like,
for a little bit.
Yeah. So
he like laughs,
but he leads them. Yeah. He's bald, which is wild.
So we'll talk about that at the end. Let's just keep going, 'cause that's just a small part.
But so then once she sends him off, Ileana's like, okay, now I'm going to go, for whatever reason, help Vesemir essentially. So, we have the big showdown of where Rydrick and Tetra are in the alchemy room. She's about to kill all of them. And that's when Vesemir shows up.
So fucking cool. It's just action. Vesemir getting pissed off, taking the potions, going full like Hulk mania.
Well, even before that, he gets Scarlet Witched, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like runs up and does the Avengers 2 thing to him and just like mind fucks him. Right when Vesemir gets in there, Kitsu goes up and makes him like see Ileana with the heart and stuff. He breaks through that quote unquote vision into this new vision.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, where it's like
that was the greatest twist to me in this whole show. Yeah. So, like they were saying, we did a poor job explaining it, but breaks out of the first vision, comes into quote unquote what we think is the real world, is having this amazing duel against Tetra with her fucking arrows and the fire magic, and she was teleporting him from room sides of the room.
Oh my god,
like,
it was so good.
You come at me with magic tricks,
dude. Yeah. She's like shooting her. She's literally just portaling it, the video game portal. She's shooting the arrow and like opening it up in the other spot
because she knows that she knows that he has to get in close because the only way he's going to do any damage is with the sword. So she just just teleports him back and forth and.
God damn.
Holy fuck, it's a great fucking battle.
What he does is he goes and stabs Tetra in the gut, and then Kitsu, who's on his knees, he goes over to Kitsu, does this little dash, cuts off Kitsu's head real quick. So Kitsu's head, when it gets revealed, Kitsu's face goes away and it becomes the alchemist.
Right.
It
becomes Rodrick.
Rodrick, yes. So then he turns around and is like, wait, then who did I just stab? It turns around, used to be Tetra, it's Lady Zerves.
Yeah.
And then he's like, wait, this isn't fucking real. Like, this can't be real. Like, I just killed the wrong person. And then all of a sudden gets fucking hit in the back. Tetra's in the doorway. It was like, and this is where she spills the guts of to why she hates Witcher so much. She was a little girl hiding in the closet. And it's really cool because that was the Witcher's weakness, was the sensitivity to their heightened senses. Mm-hmm. And she said, I didn't know this, but I learned it. And then I realized that the Witcher heard my heartbeat as I was hiding in the closet as he stabbed my mother with the sword. So we realize her tragic backstory, her mother's death, and her beginning of hatred for the Witchers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fucking wild.
Well, before the final death, right? Like, don't we have a final save by Deglin who comes in, who's also dying?
He's the one who actually ends up killing
Tetra's Tetra. Giving that monologue, going up, about to kill Vesemir, who's injured, and all of a sudden, axe in the back, Deglin crawled his way all the way to this dungeon, and he's in the doorway, throws the axe, and then dies right
out. Dude,
one last toast, too. Just the one last toast.
Get rid of that one blemish of creating more monsters, and Deglin was great.
He was so cool.
He was great.
I know. I want like a game on him.
Yeah. I do want to also say I really liked in the fake fight against Vesemir and Tetra when she does one of the teleportation portals. She thinks he has him in the teleportation, but it's just the arm that comes out on the other side.
Yeah.
And he didn't actually go through the portal. He just like paused and waited a second.
Yeah.
And then slices her fucking head off.
She turns around where the other portal should be and he's not there. And then he's like, oh shit, slow motion.
Yeah.
And it's one arm to Vesemir.
But yeah, Deglin was amazing in the end, at least. Like, even though he was evil, he was the reason all this kind of happened, to be honest.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, but in the end, I think he redeemed himself a little bit, not fully, but a little bit, to the point where I was like, okay, respect for this guy.
Definitely.
How cute was it?
Were you about to take us to the lake?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, how cute was it? You know,
like, thankfully, the illusion that was Ileana didn't get her head just completely cut off, just killed a little.
It should have been, technically, it should have been her head.
So it was swathed.
Yeah, I see what you're saying now. Yeah.
It was swapped. It's weird how they ordered it, but it is really swapped how they did it. But yeah, she's like, should have died. She's 70 years old, has a sword through her gut. Like, she should already be dead. But Vesemir picks her up, takes her to the frozen lake, uses Igni, makes it into an actual lake, and she's, oh, how beautiful, and then dies.
So the only two other things that we had were that we missed, or one thing that we missed was Vesemir did let Kitsu live.
Yes. Yeah, so Kitsu's watching Vesemir hold Ileana in his arms. And I think, who was it that says, just let him? Doesn't someone
like
say
he
let
makes
him
a decision?
Oh, Ileana says, like, yeah.
Yeah, he could have killed Kitsu, lets Kitsu go, then brings Ileana to the lake and lets her die in his arms.
Do we think we're going to see Kitsu again? Do you think it's like, because elves, I think, can live long lives, right? Like, they're like
crazy long.
Ages.
Crazy long, yeah.
So it's possible. Well, I don't know. I guess maybe not in the show. I was thinking maybe if they do another movie kind of thing where it's like after this and Geralt's a little bit older, it's like a prequel still to the show.
I think it was more of a thing just to highlight how Vesemir has morals and is a good person.
Yeah. Okay.
Got morals slowly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It took him this event to pretty much get morals.
Yeah. But anything else we want to say about the lake? Because I don't really care.
Nah,
like, if Ileana's not a real character, I don't really care. So the
last reveal.
Yeah. So the very, very last thing that happens is after Vesemir makes his peace with Ileana's death, he rides off with the knowledge about the escaped new generations of Witchers, the only ones that are surviving, and he rolls up to them. It's four kids. Yeah.
Decide.
And he just gives them the option: do you want to be Witchers or not? And then we find out, of course, mic drop moment, that it's Geralt.
Yeah, he says, decide. Geralt asks the question, but they hate us. And he says, there will always be another monster, Geralt. Mm-hmm. And then it's like,
Geralt's the first
crazy
one that grabs it, too. He's in. Yeah.
Geralt, Caillou-ass looking motherfucker.
So this isn't going to mean anything to anybody that hasn't done the games or the books, but the four kids, I think we were saying it earlier, are Lambert, Ramus, and
Eskel.
Yeah. So the two are, you know, they're going to be in season two. Lambert and Eskel are going to be in season two. Ramus, do you guys know who Ramus is? If you know, if you looked it up, don't say anything, but do you know who Ramus is?
I didn't look it up.
He was in the show.
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh, I think I did look it up then. I was looking up the name.
Oh, was he the one that died to the Striga?
Yes. Yeah, that was Ramus.
Yeah.
That's fucking dope. Though.
That is cool.
Yeah, because you find out like these four are the ones that hold the clan together. I don't even know if clan's the right word, but it's a faction.
Pretty whatever. Much a clan now.
Yeah. I'm going to say
decimated.
I'm going to say if you want to get into The Witcher, this is the perfect way. Like at least the television show, this is the perfect way to get into it. Like amazing animation, soundtrack's incredible, voice acting's incredible, just a flawless movie in my opinion.
Does not ruin anything for the show. It actually gears you up to know what you should expect and gives you some lore about it's hundreds of years in the past. So
and again, we get characters from this movie in the show, like Philavandrel and Geralt, obviously.
Yeah. But the reason Geralt was bald was just so they didn't have to, it wasn't obvious when he had white hair.
White hair.
Yeah. Well, that was just it. That's fake. Like he should have.
That's strange though, because the actual reason why he has white hair is because, like you said earlier, when he was going through the trials, he had such an exceptional abilities that they actually did further testing on him and advanced testing. And that kind of explains why he might be a little bit stronger than everybody else and have white hair.
But that's the thing. The trials are done. They're extinct. They already happened. Like, because the mages, Roderick is dead. Like, they're already done. These are the surviving four of the whole.
Okay.
Like, they're already on the path to being witchers. Like, they have the abilities. They've survived the trials.
I'm looking it up now. People are guessing that he's bald because of the trials. Like,
yeah, I think he already
and then he'll take the potions of extra whatever, not like stuff it is, and then he'll get his hair, white hair.
Yeah. Are his eyes witcher eyes? That's all.
Yeah, they are witcher eyes. They're
at the end.
Yeah, they're
okay. There you go.
Yeah, you go. Already went through the trials.
So, okay. So Geralt is bald as a result of the Witcher trials.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And that's fine. Even though that book wise, the timelines don't really line up, but it's fine.
Oh, and you can and in the beginning. Now I'm thinking about it. You can like remember when they're saying, "Let's go get properly drunk." They're listening to the kids screaming, like they're going through the potions anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I forgot about that.
So I feel like we did a really good job of hitting everything I wanted to talk about there, but I do want to bring up the two issues I wrote down prior to even starting this podcast. We already covered a lot of the first one, which bothered you a little bit, was the Witcher's OP powers of using magic, and I think we kind of beat that one to death. I agree with you, but just for the sake of the anime style, I'm all in.
Yeah,
and it was just cool. And the second thing that I saw a lot of people on Reddit and like a lot of people on Twitter or whatever complaining about was the monsters that got brought to Kaer Morhen shouldn't have been like, why were they not first? They should have been killing the people that summoned them. Like, they're not aligned. And second,
because Kitsu can still talk to him. So I was thinking just Kitsu made an order, like, don't kill, like something along the lines of don't kill the humans.
I don't think they're like sentient enough to have thoughts like that for the most part.
But we saw that Kitsu was able to control their thoughts. Like, I just think that was maybe part of Kitsu's ability. Just that like, she can literally just mind control these things essentially.
Sure. And then the last thing I'll say on this is just that I want to say that, this isn't even my knowledge. I'm just like regurgitating other knowledge that I read. I didn't even know that this was really a thing, but apparently it's implied in the books that the fall of Kaer Morhen was directly caused by humans, meaning like to make the symbolism that like that humans can be evil too, and they're the ones who brought the fall of the Witchers down, not monsters.
I mean, technically there were humans, the people that were helping Kitsu and Tetra were humans technically.
I just mean it should have been no monsters.
Well, yeah, I agree.
I get what you're saying, and I guess technically they can say, oh, like technicality humans did cause this because they were terrified of the Witchers and they didn't think they thought they were these monsters, therefore that fear caused, you know, them to get attacked and stuff like that.
And for the record, neither bothers me at all.
This is hysterical because I had, you know, two final sections, things I wasn't a big fan of and things that I liked. And I had two things that I wasn't a big fan of. And you just named up both. So we're good there. But yeah, I actually read one of the writers was doing a Q&A. And one of the big questions is like, why were the monsters so willing to team up with Tetra and the mages and the humans? And they were like, hey, like, that's a fair question. To be honest, we didn't really think about it too much until we got questioned on it. And I was like, well, that's upsetting.
That kind of sucks, yeah.
But I guess it's like one of those, the enemy of the enemy is my friend type of deals. Mm-hmm. But still, I was a little confused about it too. But things I really, really liked, just two things. One, the Battle of Kaer Morhen was out of this world. And the only way that they can portray that is through this anime style. I was watching an interview with the showrunner Lauren Schmidt Hisrick, and she talked about one of the things, like what she does a lot is just get ideas pitched to her. And she's like, no, we can't do that. It's too expensive. This will never look good in live action. There's just so many restrictions that, you know, they can't do a lot of things they want to do. But then they get introduced to this anime style and they're like, we can do anything. Like, oh, idea? Like, hell yeah, do that. Put that in there. That is
the main reason why live actions of animes 99% of the time blow. Like, Dragon Ball Evolution sucks because you just can't match that level of CGI with just flawless animation.
What's the only good live adaption? Come on. It's regarded well.
Alice in Borderland.
Oh, okay, that one. Okay. Two of them, actually. That one's the shit. But of a classic anime, what's the only live adaptation that worked? Adaptation that worked?
Not Death Note.
Nope.
No,
definitely not Death Note.
Yeah, that flops. I can't think
not
of it.
Full Metal.
Nope. That did not do well either. Most don't. And One Piece is coming out. Eventually,
I'm nervous.
I'm very fucking nervous. Rurouni Kenshin's the only one that is considered really good. Yeah,
I remember.
But I'm actually sorry to cut off and just go to a whole nother route. But I'm actually looking at the beginning, and Geralt in the beginning has hair. He's blonde and blue eyed.
Okay, so that makes sense.
Oh,
yeah,
they did zoom in on him, and I was wondering what the that makes total sense of why he shed his hair. Perfect.
Final question for you, Paul here. Because I thought of it as you were talking about what you liked about it. And you said you liked the animation and loved Kaer Morhen. So what battle was better? The animated battle of Kaer Morhen or Morty's Blood Ridge?
I was actually thinking about that because I was talking about that. I honestly want to say that this was better.
This, definitely.
Battle of Blood Ridge was sick, but it was just unbelievable effort and production value. So pleasing just watching the transitions like I was talking about earlier.
5 minutes in, I was all in on the animation when I saw how he handled the sword, how they drew him killing, and like they were not afraid for blood, gore. Like the Witchers were getting destroyed at some points. Ripped. I love how it can be dark like that and it still just be organic. Like it was just great.
Yeah, the dude's eye was getting eaten out of his fucking face during the battle. Like it's crazy.
One thing that I really liked about this movie that I hope will roll over into the Netflix series is, you know, we talked about it already. They talk a lot about Kaer Morhen, how witches are made, the trials and all the processes. So now that they've done this and it's a Netflix movie as well, hopefully they won't have to dwell on that process too much in season two of The Witcher. Hopefully they can be like, okay, our fans saw this. Hopefully we can skim over it and not waste too much screen time.
I'm honestly kind of hoping that they do like maybe not a trilogy of the movies now, but maybe like even a sequel to this movie. I think I would be absolutely fine with. I think what I also was reading too is that this movie, I was upset because the only one book none of us have read was Season of Storms. And apparently this movie has a lot of ties to Season of Storms.
That's so lame.
Yeah, isn't it? That's so lame. So I'm thinking that maybe they could get away with one more movie as like a younger adult Geralt.
Oh, there's like,
and still like,
yeah, all the pre-Ciri era of Geralt's life is open for interpretation. You could do whatever you want.
And I would be fine with one more movie. If they don't want to do another movie, also fine with me, but just a lot of questions left. And I hope we get more into maybe like, I really liked Tetra Gilchrist as a character, to be honest. I'm upset that she is dead.
Maybe she has a sister or something.
Yeah, that's what, like, I'm hoping maybe she, for whatever reason, maybe had a kid or, you know, something along those lines.
We found out one of the mages in Yennefer's like,
because she could be
circle,
related
could
to
be something.
I would love if like somehow they tied her to Yennefer in some sense.
Oh my
sense.
God, that'd be awesome. Because then that would mean Yennefer's descended from the first magic user, and that
And that would make sense exactly. Yeah. So I like the idea of having that first human mage introduced in this movie, and then hopefully it becomes a bigger part in the later on. But we can go around just out of 10. What do we think this movie was?
10.
I was going to say 9.
And that's crazy because Paul is usually like the diehard, give me more Witcher kind of stuff. So, I mean, maybe that plays into it. Maybe he's a little bit more picky than me and Luke, but I would say 9.5.
I think it's because Paul played the games things that are there. And I get that. I haven't. 10 out of 10.
Yeah, I would say 9.5 at the least. Like, it's such a perfect movie.
I mean, I think it's, what is Netflix animated that is better? That might be my singular favorite piece of media that Netflix has animated.
People would argue Castlevania, I think, right?
Yeah, I was going to say Castlevania is the only thing that comes to mind, but I thought this was better than Castlevania.
Beastars sucks.
Shout out Alki.
So anyway,
yeah, 9.25. I'll bump it up to that. Right, just
so average score is a 9.5 at least between us. So yeah. That if that tells you anything, watch this fucking movie and get into The Witcher.
Watch it. It's unbelievable. It's so good. Season 2 coming out December. Cannot wait.
We will obviously be covering that.
Obviously. And we're going to be the fucking we're going to be The Witcher podcast. That's for sure.
Heard it here. But until then, that's going to do it for us, guys. If you like what you heard, our podcast covers a little bit of Netflix's Wynonna Earp, the brand new Loki series, Shadow and Bone, WandaVision, season 5 of The Magicians, Amazon's The Boys. We cover a lot of really good stuff. If you're on the World Wide Web, give us a follow on Instagram and Twitter and hit subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast. Check us out on our website, bingetowntv.com, and keep an eye out for our brand new Patreon with a whole lot of bonus content. Once again, guys, this is Bingetown TV, and thank you so much for listening.
Never hesitate.
Damn, a little fuck up on the this is the very last one.
You were cruising.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.